through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Great to have everybody with us today on a Monday. You know, there was something on Friday that came out in the midst of all that Quentin Dunbar news concerning Aaron Rodgers and how he feels about his team drafting a quarterback in the first round underneath him. So we'll get to that coming up in about 10 minutes or so when we do some NFL headlines. But as we put the last dance in Michael Jordan to bed here for a while, or maybe forever. We'll see if they end up doing more parts to Michael Jordan. Did you guys hear, by the way, that they didn't actually finish putting this whole thing together until Thursday night? Scott Van Pelt did an interview with the guy's name. I forget his last name. It's like Lahir or Mir or whatever.
I did not hear this.
Yeah, they didn't actually finish up like the final edits and everything until Thursday night. So there was some question as to how they were going to so what the tone would be and how they would leave it. Because, right, if you think about it, if you're writing a book, making a movie, whatever it is, what's the hardest thing to do? Think of an ending.
Ask George R.
Right?
R. Martin.
That's the hardest thing to
finish it.
Right. And so the way that they end, I thought the way that they finished it was fine. I mean, if you think about it, the ending of Michael Jordan's career as a Bull was visited or revisited in the beginning of every single episode, right? They'd go to 1998. And then they'd flash back to another year or in college or whatever. Then they'd come back to it, et cetera. So you kind of knew where it was going. But just generally, your thought about the theme, the takeaway, like what's the lesson that this documentary taught us? I thought Bob Condotta, when we had him on before, put it really well. He said, what drives these guys to win doesn't change when they get older. I mean, you see Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan reacting to all these things that are said about him from people like, whether it's the media or Brian Russell or Gary Payton or whoever it is. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. And maybe that's what it takes to be that kind of winner. What do you think, Stacey?
I think it's that they're, I'm going to preface this by saying my own takeaway from it is because I watched it with someone who did not know a lot about this story at all. Really a sports fan outside of maybe some football. So I don't know what other people's experiences were, whether you watched it by yourself, with a roommate, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. I was watching it with my roommate, and she became a huge fan of Michael Jordan through this. So it was fascinating because what shaped my own takeaway from the documentary was watching someone that didn't know a lot about this person at all and realizing how universal the respect for that kind of person was really interesting. So for instance, she didn't know about his father. She didn't know about, like how many times he'd won, just how good he was. And it was really fascinating to watch someone fall in love with a player who it feels like everyone already knows, or to just have moments of you're in awe of this person's mentality. Because I think we sometimes get into our own little bubble of we're all sports fans. We've all watched sports and we all assume everyone has the same underlying knowledge. But if I had to guess what stuck out with the broadest audience and the greatest number of people, it would be Michael Jordan's mentality and how respected that was, whether it's work ethic, whether it's this idea of not quitting, of not giving up, of trying to get better, not just what he accomplished, you know, on the court or in his professional life, but those kinds of things that people apply to their own lives. I think those were the things that the greatest number of people took away.
Probably. Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, what I would take away from it, honestly, is a couple of things is, one, obviously, as Stacey mentioned, Michael Jordan's mentality. There's nothing that has been quite like it. The next guy that you have seen next to Michael Jordan has been Kobe Bryant. And Kobe Bryant largely modeled his game and his approach after Michael Jordan. I mean, they were cut from the same cloth in a lot of ways. But Michael Jordan was the, you know, the father of that killer instinct, that mentality at all times. And it wasn't just on game day. That's the thing, is it was every day. And whatever he was going to do, you weren't going to outwork the guy, one. And two, his mental toughness and desire to be great and not let anything hold him back, including his teammates, his coach, his general manager, none of that was going to get in Michael Jordan's way. I mean, can you imagine a player talking out to the media the way that Michael Jordan talked about his GM? I mean, could you imagine that? Yeah. I, as publicly as he did? I mean, he did not care. If you were in his way to win, then he was going to try and remove you, or, you know, remove you as an obstacle. And I think that was something that really stood out to me. And it was something that was, it didn't just form when he became a pro. It was a part of his everyday life and what he was from a young man all the way up. But two, also from a team building standpoint, how can you have one of the greatest teams, the greatest organizations come from nothing to be unbelievable, in the different cast of characters it took to, you know, have this melting pot of a successful team? You needed a coach that was unique and different and dynamic and understanding and loving. You needed a GM that was cutthroat and, you know, tried to do everything he could to constantly improve the team, sometimes to his own detriment. You needed role players, and you needed another superstar next to Michael Jordan. So to me, it was just a really cool, awesome watch to see all these personalities come together to go under one umbrella, which was Michael Jordan's lead, and how that all worked to me was a fascinating watch, you know, through these 10 episodes.
I'm going to offer something a little bit different just as I'm thinking about it now. It just kind of hit me. I don't think that I learned anything. I don't think that there was anything in these documentaries. I mean, other than the behind the scenes stuff, I mean, I didn't know that he said some of those things, but I kind of assumed that he would, that he'd be, you know, a big trash talker in the locker room and the whole thing. But I think during COVID here, with something, you know, needing something to watch on a Sunday night, knowing that everybody else is going to be watching it, A, it gave us a chance to be a part of something together because there is no live sporting events right now. But also, and I think this is the reason why I enjoy sports documentaries. Documentaries take us back into the past, and it allows us to relive things. Like just seeing all of that footage of what went on in the games, and then them walking off the courts together, and the, you know, getting on the bus. Like it, the footage that they had, it filled in a lot of gaps in our memories that we had of things that we didn't really know took place, but assume might have. And so it was a good blend of sort of new information that just helped to deepen and enrich some of the old stuff that we, you know, that we already knew. I mean, I knew about his father. I knew about the three championships. I knew about the gambling. I knew he was super competitive, all this stuff. But somehow I really enjoyed watching the documentary, probably because it brought back the old days. And who doesn't like reliving the old days? I mean, especially probably someone my age or maybe a little bit older who went through the 90s and watched Jordan dominate the way he did. I mean, who wouldn't want to relive at least a little bit of that if you have the opportunity? So I think that that's probably what compelled most of us to watch it. Stacey, like you, I think I'm most interested in the opinions of people who didn't know much about him at all. I mean, I'm always interested to show documentaries like to my girlfriend or whatever about stuff that she has no idea about.
What about that mainly scene just at the end of episode 7? Do you think that stuck with you? Like, was there any moment that stuck with you, even if you knew he was competitive? That's the one where Salk was talking about, where he's tearing up and he gets emotional and has to cut when he cries because he's talking about. Did anything kind of stick out to you where you were like, yeah, I knew he was competitive, but this was a different side?
That was a big one. I'll admit that. And actually, that moment resonated with me personally for different reasons. So, yes, to answer your question. But I guess there weren't too many moments like that where it was like, wow, Jordan is that guy too, and I didn't know. You know,
Tom, one thing that stood out to me Stacey and Tom, was, you know, everything that he was dealing with his father, right? Losing his father under the circumstances in which he lost him, you know, the constant talks that he had, the criticisms that he was receiving because of his gambling situation. I mean, I just sympathized with him tremendously. I can't even imagine, you know, hearing all that, taking all that on and not just losing your mind. I mean, could you imagine? I mean, if you were being falsely accused of all these things and these rumors and these speculations, and not only just losing it from a personal standpoint, but letting it affect your game and the way you played on the court. I mean, for most people, that's exactly what would happen. And for Jordan, he was able to overcome that. And in that final series against the Supersonics, him just collapsing to the floor and crying, all that emotion and everything that he held on to that particular moment, to me, just resonated. I don't know how it hits you guys, but to me, that was one of the other powerful moments, just like that one that you pointed out.
And the documentary was littered with those. I mean, the thing about his father, I can't possibly put myself in his shoes. A, just being a superstar athlete. B, being hounded by the media. And C, having your father murdered in the middle of all of that. So I guess I didn't. I don't want to know what that's like. So I didn't really spend too much time thinking about it. But yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, it was a powerful moment, if nothing else. But definitely well done all around. The documentary, I mean, it was great, really, from start to finish. I watched every episode. I looked forward to it. So hopefully now this documentary has done enough where now we're starting to get some good news here and there between baseball and some states wanting to open up their facilities. And hopefully we'll have an NFL season, college football season on time. Right now, let's hit some NFL headlines. This is what we didn't get a chance to get to last week concerning Aaron Rodgers. He's answering questions about the Packers' drafting of Jordan Love in the first round. And what he says is, I think the general reaction at first was a surprise, like many people. Obviously, I'm not going to say that I was, you know, thrilled by the pick necessarily, but the organization is thinking not only about the present, but about the future. And I respect that. There are some new factors that are out of my control. My sincere desire to start and finish with the same organization, just as it has with many other players over the years, may not be a reality at this point. So now this is about, what, 2 weeks after the draft that he said this? I can't imagine what he was actually feeling on draft night. He may have been cursing up a storm. But 2 weeks later, commenting on this, he seems to have an understanding that, you know what, I'm not going to be around here forever. I may have to finish somewhere else. Jake, what do you want to say about this?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's very clear in this situation. The Packers have laid out the situation. Look, Aaron, you know, you're not going to be around forever here, a part of this organization. We're ready to move on from you. And I think that the Packers, maybe they knew that they were starting this timetable. Maybe they were thinking 2-3 years. But I think for Aaron Rodgers, he wants out immediately. When he come out with these conversations or these statements, to me, it's, hey, look, I know that my time is coming to an end here in Green Bay. It's unfortunate. I wanted to finish as a Green Bay Packer, but you know, it's going to be time for me to move on and be a part of a team that's actually going to build around me and try and win Super Bowls rather than building for the future. So it just really struck me when I saw this as the NFL, it's a business. It doesn't wait around for anybody, even for Peyton Manning. You know, when he had his neck injury, the Colts didn't wait around for one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. They went out and instead drafted Andrew Luck, and therefore making Peyton Manning a free agent, and he goes to the Denver Broncos. Joe Montana moves on and goes to the Chiefs. Tom Brady now moving on and going to Tampa Bay, right? Drew Brees eventually had to go to the New Orleans Saints. So I think that Aaron Rodgers is just going to be another name that's put it on with some of these great quarterbacks that eventually has just had to move on because the NFL and organizations are looking out for themselves in terms of what is best business-wise and long-term.
So you don't buy that he genuinely is just sad that he doesn't get to finish his career with the Packers. You think this is like, hey, this is, I'm putting a nice face forward, but I want to get out of here this season.
Well, I'm sure he's upset. I mean, would you guys not be upset if all of a sudden, you know, 710 drafted your replacement and you knew that for the next 2 years?
I'd love it.
If I don't know about you guys.
No, you wouldn't.
you would. No, you wouldn't. Get out of here.
No, you
You know, and you got to sit there for another 2-3 years as you're hearing, oh, yeah, Jordan Love, he's great. He's going to be the future. He's going to be this and that. To me, I would want to get out there as soon as possible. If you're not focused on trying to build this team around me when there's some clear holes to begin with, and if you fill these holes, I can help get you to a Super Bowl. If you're not concerned about that, then what's the point of me being here? And I think he's done enough for the organization and for the fan base to for – the fans to realize it's not Aaron Rodgers' fault. It's the organization going in a different direction. So for me, when I see it, I don't think Aaron could do a whole lot of damage to his Green Bay Packer legacy necessarily.
You know what, though? I mean, now that you're describing it that way, like, I think I agree with you. And I don't know how many years Aaron Rodgers thinks he has left, but I mean, what if he just continued to play with the Packers for as long as they want them? I mean, they're still going to try to win, I would think. I don't think that they're going to be, like, tanking until Jordan Love can assume the starting quarterback role. I mean, if he thinks that they're just going to tank until Jordan Love is their quarterback, then that's one thing. I'd want to get out of there now. But, you know, I mean, what's really the difference if he knows it's going to be at least a few years before they want Jordan Love in there?
Well, what's the reason why Tom Brady wanted to leave New England? He wanted to be the center, the focal point of that offense and the organization, so to speak. And I think with Aaron Rodgers, he has been for a number of years since he's been the quarterback there in Lambeau. And now it's shifting. It's changing. They're putting more of an emphasis in the running game. They have clear holes and needs at receiver. They didn't address one for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's a huge statement by the organization, by head coach and GM. So, to me, if I'm going to spend my last few years, guys, as a quarterback, I want to spend it with an organization, with a team that's going to build around me, that's going to try and really go for it, or at the very minimum, have some really fun, successful seasons. And so, you know, you look at teams next year, I mean, Vegas, you know, with John Gruden, the Dallas Cowboys, maybe. I mean, those are some locations where they've got some premier talent, and they've got head coaches that would certainly build an offense around Aaron Rodgers, and you could finish out a really fun, you know, career rather than feeling like you're treading water in Green Bay.
I think Tom just like saw a trademark opportunity for Tampa Bay. I think that's why he left. Really, the only reason. You wouldn't go seize that?
I mean,
if you saw a Tampa Bay trademark opportunity, Tom, you could literally use that. Well, not now. Tom Brady beat you to it, but you could have.
I never get to think of these things, man.
Well,
I mean, think about all the money you missed out of, Tom.
Yeah, that's your fault.
My ship's coming in someday, guys. Someday. Evidently, the Chargers looked into signing Cam Newton, but decided to stick with Tyrod Taylor. Is there a better placeholder in all the NFL than poor Tyrod Taylor?
Isn't it?
I mean, they just drafted Justin Herbert, so we know where they're going. I think that they probably did the right thing here. But if they thought that they had any chance of winning now, why not just put Cam Newton on a 1-year deal? Unless you think he's just, you know, not a fit in other ways in addition to being on the field.
Yeah, I really think, guys, that it has to do a lot with just Cam Newton off the field than it does on the field, because he certainly can help you win football games. I mean, he's one of the best athletes out there in the NFL. He's a freak of nature. But when you talk about Cam, his leadership style, you talk about, you know, he is the life of a party. And I'm not saying that necessarily in a negative way, but when it comes to your quarterback, a new quarterback coming to an organization, and you're not really sure if he's going to be your long-term answer, you're kind of leery of that. And for Anthony Lynn, he knows what he is getting out of Taylor, and he knows that he's been with him in Buffalo. He knows that he's getting a steady guy, a guy that can really help Justin Herbert prepare and learn from. So I can see why they looked into him, and never pulled the trigger. And for Cam Newton, he's just in this really weird spot where I wonder who is going to be that team that gives him the opportunity to be on a roster. He's very clearly deserving of it. It's just it's a weird offseason for a guy like him, because in normal circumstances, I think he would have been signed, you know, pretty quickly. But the fact that he couldn't get physicals, I think that really hurt him, guys.
Question: what are the actual off the field issues that we're thinking teams have? Is it that Cam displays some kind of like cancerous attitude thing, or is it that they're worried he's not going to play second fiddle? Because I don't
remember
there being.
He's not going to play second fiddle.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that he's. Is it going to be? Look, he's not going to have the mentality of a backup quarterback. He will literally be in there competing. And wouldn't you kind of want that?
You do want it. You want that for sure. But I think, you know, with some guys, there's certain things or certain aspects where they're going to grab all of the attention, right? And it's part of the reason, you know, very much
Speaking
right
of
or wrong.
George.
You could look at it this way. You can look at it and say Colin Kaepernick, right? Why do teams hesitate from giving Colin Kaepernick, or why did they at this point? Well, two things. Obviously, there was all that undertone from his message. And then also there was the other aspect of, do you want your backup quarterback getting more attention than your starting quarterback? And everybody, you know, basically giving him his platform, a very strong mic and all of that. I think teams avoid it. And with Cam Newton, I think that's another aspect that you look at. Not that Cam is vocal in that sense whatsoever, but he's got more attention on him from that. You're bringing in a superstar backup quarterback is what you're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got to be a starter. If I were the Chargers and I didn't draft Justin Herbert, it wouldn't make sense to not draft him. But like if I thought, you know what, I think I can win now. I need a quarterback for the next 2 years. I'd have no problem signing Cam Newton. Just bringing him in, hopefully he's healthy, etc. I wouldn't be worried about like him, you know, prioritizing flashiness over, you know, substance or whatever the criticism of him is. I'd bring him in personally. Let's see. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit today. This week is Felix Week. Last week was Junior Week. This week is Felix Week. We'll tell you about that. Couple more NFL headlines too. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
As I mentioned before, this week is Felix Week. So we'll be playing games on our air, 710 ESPN Seattle, at 7 o'clock every night that feature Felix Hernandez in one of the many great games that he had. So I got to think the no-hitter is going to be there, or the perfect game, excuse me, is going to be in there somewhere. Tonight, though, will be his complete game shutout versus the Red Sox from June 28th of 2012. I think I remember that game. Was it in Boston or was it here? If it was in Boston, I remember it. He always pitched well there, but I think... yeah, complete game shutout versus Boston, June 28, 2012. That game will be tonight. And it's interesting because, you know, whenever we talk about Felix Hernandez, it's always about the missed opportunities that, or the opportunities he missed because he was a Seattle Mariner. And believe it or not, he was busy on Twitter this weekend. So there's for those of you who don't know, there's a documentary out. It's on YouTube. It's done by SB Nation and a guy named John. Is it Boyce? B-O-I-S? I think that's how it's pronounced. It's the whole history of the Seattle Mariners. He calls it one of the most fascinating teams. What's that?
It's really good. Just recommend.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of this one. I've seen some of the other stuff that he's done, and it is absolutely terrific. Like, he's really gifted as I'll call it a filmmaker. What the heck? It's a documentary on the Mariners. But Felix retweeted the link to the documentary and had the emojis, like the zip it sign, you know, with the zipper across the mouth, as if to say, what exactly? Like, I don't want to talk about this? Or what do you think he's saying there?
I interpret the zip emoji as, but I didn't say it. That's how I interpret that emoji. Curtis, can I get a concurrent?
I interpret it as
like you didn't hear it from me, but like, oh, I would say it, but my lips are sealed.
I interpret it
like
as
an endorsement, a mild endorsement.
I think it means if you don't have anything nice to say, then don't say anything, and that's what Felix is saying.
Exactly, which means you don't have anything nice to say, which means you agree with it. Right? I think I could teach
Jake?
A master class in interpreting emojis.
Oh, God.
So let's just be clear. Stacy just turned her opinion and morphed it into Curtis when she realized that she was wrong. Congratulations, Curtis.
I am right
there with you. I fully agree with you there. If you don't think, if you don't have anything positive to say, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. I think that that's what Felix is saying in this moment, especially when it comes to regards of his career, what he endured with that organization during that time. I mean, I can't even imagine how frustrating it probably was for him to be the most dominant pitcher in the game for such a long stretch and to be a part of such a franchise that gave him no support in return.
Jake, but he chose to be here after like his first, 9 or 10 years here. He chose to be here again when Jack Sorensic rewarded him with that big contract, and he cried. Remember, when he was so happy to be here, he actually cried at the press conference because he was so happy about it. So I don't think he's necessarily like frustrated by his time with the Mariners. I think he's saying what Stacy was saying initially, which is like, you know, you don't have to watch the miserable history of a team here. Like, it's not worth it. That's not how I was taking it. Which one of you said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all?
That was me.
Curtis.
Oh, that was you. Oh, Curtis is right.
That's what I said. No, I said the zip lip emoji with him tweeting out the video is a way for him to agree with it without agreeing with it. So it's saying like, you didn't hear it from me. Ooh. That's kind of how I see it. You know, like the zip mouth. Ooh. That's kind of.
Oh, okay. I actually don't agree with that. I think Felix has Mariner blood pumping through his veins all the way. I don't think Felix
think
would ever say anything bad about the team.
I think he loves the organization, but I wish that I could get insight from someone who'd covered this team in and out forever, and maybe we should just add it to our list of people we want on here. I would love to know the ways that they dropped the ball with him. Like when he came back in that press conference you were talking about, was it because he believed that they were going to make some changes and that they were going to do something and he believed they were on the right track and that he was part of this group moving forward? And then
I don't think Felix cares. Like, it's funny, we were just talking about Aaron Rodgers, like, and whether or not the team's going
to
continue to build around him.
World Series?
I don't think that it's in Felix's personality to be concern himself with that type of stuff. Whereas with Aaron Rodgers, it might be. Felix Hernandez is a pretty simple guy. He wants to go, but I think he wanted to do it as a Mariner. I think as far as the other stuff, he's just a pitcher. He just goes out there every 5 days, does his thing, goes back to the dugout, and like whether his team supports him with runs or not, like I don't think he cares. He knows what he did.
A professional athlete doesn't want to win. You can't tell me a professional athlete doesn't want to win. I think
of course he wants to win. Stacy
wants to go to a postseason.
I don't think he got down on the organization because they didn't get to the postseason. I mean, look, maybe at the end, with the way his skills deteriorated and the way the organization kind of nudged him out, maybe he didn't care for that. But as far like this was Felix's world up here in Seattle, big fish, small pond, and I think he liked it that way. I think that was his personality.
Well, he definitely could have liked it, and that goes to show and talk about a whole different mentality of, yeah, it would be nice to go to the playoffs, it would be nice to go to the World Series, but he is a pitcher, and as a pitcher, you have one job, and that is to be extremely elite and to give your team the best chance to win game in and game out, and as long as he was getting his recognition, which he did. He won a Cy Young. He was King Felix. Like you said, Tom, he was a big fish in a small pond. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can be comfortable with that. And also, Felix, he was recruited by the Mariners at an extremely young age, before everybody else, before the Yankees, before all that. Rick Riz came on and said that on our show. You know, so I think there's a loyalty factor in there with King Felix. And so if you look at, you know, that correlation there, you know, I do think that he could be frustrated at the organization for not doing better things to win, but and saying, look, I was a great player with an awful team, but I still enjoyed my time because I loved the fan base. They treated me right, and the organization put me up on a pedestal. I mean, I think all those things can be true.
Yeah, I mean, he...
Right, and maybe
as far as being...
Like, maybe he's coming out and he's saying, like, other people can keep their mouth shut, that we were good, right? Like, maybe that's what he's saying. But
my that wouldn't be true.
Well, but you know why? But you know why I initially interpreted it negatively? It's not because I don't think that Felix Hernandez loves Seattle. I was there for his final game. Lydia and I were watching together, and we saw his kind of like farewell to the stands. He was so emotional. He was crying. It was clear that this city and this team meant the world to him. It was obvious. I'm not contesting that. But the reason I say this and the reason I interpreted it this way is that during the break, we were talking about how crazy it is to be as good as he was on a team and that player to never make it to the postseason. So then we got into this debate, and you can join it if you want, 710-710 on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. If there is a player who was one of the best players of his generation or one of the best players on that team ever or in the game across any sport that never made it to a postseason. And it could be, there are some guys that you might throw out and you'll be like, yeah, he made it to the postseason, but he's like a top five quarterback and never won a Super Bowl. Like, those guys are out there too. But to never make it to a postseason when you have had a perfect game, you've won a Cy Young Award, we were one of the top pitchers for the longest time, and you were this team's ace. I mean, that's a bummer. Like, I don't know how. You might have a soft spot for this team and love this team, and you've sacrificed time with this team and for this city, and you love them, but I don't know how you leave and you don't feel a little sad about that.
He might, but in this case, just with the tweets, he may not want to throw the team under the bus, because there's a documentary being made about how pathetic the organization, not the organization, but just the franchise has been for the last, what, 45 years or so. Look, Felix,
I think it's
by the
also
way,
about how lovable they are.
They're lovable?
Yeah, that's the point of the documentary, is to say this organization
is...
Yes, no, it is. It says this organization is... there are so many things unique to it where you're like, only the Mariners. I mean, it is clear that the people making this documentary are fans of the Mariners.
Okay, well, that you're right. That would explain a lot. All right, well, let's address some texts next. Are there any other athletes who should have made it further than they did? I mean, whether it's the playoffs or getting to a championship or something like that. We'll take some of your texts next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
We were just talking about Felix Hernandez a second ago and how badly he did or didn't want to win. Look, I think we all believe that every athlete, like you said, Stacey, goes into a game believing that they can win, should win, and that they definitely, and it's definitely an important thing to them. I think the difference between Felix Hernandez and Aaron Rodgers, who's probably miffed right now, that he's you know, not being surrounded with the right talent or whatever. I think Felix, as a pitcher, was among the most competitive guys in the league on the day he pitched. When he went out to the mound,
yes,
Nothing mattered more to him than winning and pitching well on that day. I remember that there was a game, it was an afternoon game, I feel like in maybe 2016 or 17. It was a day where all the Blue Jay fans had come down. And Felix Hernandez was just not having it. He was so mad that they had overtaken Safeco Field that he was just pitching his heart out. He came off the mound in like the sixth or seventh inning after having gotten a big out. And he was like cursing under his breath saying, this is my blanking house, right? Like winning and winning in Seattle in front of those fans matter to him a lot. But whether he did this, I don't know. I think he drew a line somewhere in his head where he said, you know what? I can go out there and control the days that I pitch, but what the organization does around me, I can't control that, and I'm not going to concern myself with it. Whereas Aaron Rodgers watches another quarterback get drafted, sees that he doesn't have a ton of weapons around him, and he makes comments public about what his organization's doing. I don't think that Felix Hernandez ever had that gene in him. So I think that that's what separates him. But he's definitely on a list of guys who never made the playoffs despite how great they were. And you can text us 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line, if you wish. Guys that never made the playoffs, superstars that never made the playoffs, or maybe, you know, never won a championship. In the NBA and NHL, if you're a superstar
success.
And you didn't make the playoffs, then I don't know what happened there. Because if you're in the NHL or NBA, you should be making the playoffs as a superstar all the time. Baseball, football, it's a little harder to make the playoffs, especially baseball. Because up until recently with the wild card, the extra wild cards, it was a lot harder to win the division and to get that wild card. I mean, it was just it's more difficult, so you can understand that. But, Stacey, who are we having? Who's being texted into some of these guys?
We have Ken Griffey Jr., so the 843. Where are you? Ken Griffey Jr., iconic playoff moments, but no championship. Totally fair. 425 says Megatron for sure. 206 says Aaron Rodgers. Carmelo Anthony, Ken Griffey Jr., Dan Marino, Brett Favre, Sammy Sosa.
Aaron Rodgers has a championship.
Couple times. Well, I know, but I think they're saying like Aaron Rodgers was compared to Tom Brady as the two best quarterbacks going back and forth. It wasn't the LeBron MJ conversation, but it was like, what would Tom Brady be like in New England? But then you look at Tom Brady with six rings and Aaron Rodgers with one Super Bowl appearance.
True.
Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers is excluded from the conversation because he actually won
a
Super Bowl. We're talking about...
I know. Reading the text. Okay, then there's also... I actually really like this one. I'm going to tell you why. Someone said Dick Butkus made two all-decade teams, no playoffs. Charles Barkley, Reggie
Barkley
Miller.
Did.
I'm talking about people that never went there, guys. One person said, I'm so sorry, I forgot your area code. It's a little too far down on this list, but Barry Sanders. And at first I thought, well, no, he's been in the postseason. But Barry Sanders... all but one of his postseason appearances. He has six total playoff games in his entire career. One of the best running backs ever. Five of those were wild card games, and four of them were losses. He had a wild card game where he rushed for 169 yards, and Detroit lost 28-24 to Green Bay. That is a bummer. He's never been further than the divisional round. They lost at Washington in 91. But since 91, they won a wild card game, and then they moved on and then lost. Since then, he had only appeared in four appearances, all wild card games, all losses. That's pretty crazy. I know it's still the postseason, but you have one of the best players in the game at the time losing in the wild card round every single time.
I can't think of too many more baseball players. I'm trying to think, like, God, Felix Hernandez and who else? I mean, it seems like...
Someone said Ichiro?
One of the reasons why this documentary was made is because the Mariners are the lone team who's never made the World Series, correct? They're the last team that's never made the World Series. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be one of the reasons they made this documentary. If every other team now has made the World Series, at least gotten there once, that means that most star pitchers or players who have been on these other teams have made it. I mean, Felix is really the lone exception to guys who at least have made the playoffs at least once. I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah, if you guys can think of anyone that never had a playoff appearance, 710-710. Go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I really can't think of playoff appearances. I mean, to me, that's a very tough one. One name that who was a Seahawk 2 years ago, Brandon Marshall. Think about Brandon Marshall. He had an incredible career as a receiver, played for a lot of really you know, really bad teams that, you know, never were able to get a legitimate playoff berth and didn't go. If he did go to the playoffs, I can't remember if the Jets went to the playoffs in 2015. I know they had a really good year that year. I can't remember if they did or not. But yeah, I mean, it's incredible. He has a tremendous career and not a single playoff appearance. Crazy.
Yeah, he was kind of bad luck, but he was a heck of a receiver. He's one of those guys. Calvin Johnson, I think you said already, he was another one. No, he went to the playoffs, I think. Maybe like once or twice.
Well, I think people started offering. I think what this turned into and why I love this debate is it's people where the greatness that they were never matched. It's those stats where someone says, hey, did you know Barry Sanders only ever won one playoff game? And you think, what? It's the same Mike Trout thing, right? He's had a playoff appearance. But when you're like, do you know Mike Trout has had like this single series? And you kind of pause and you think, oh, yeah. It's those guys that their stardom and ability just does not match what they've been able to do as no fault of their own, usually, in the postseason.
It would be like Kobe Bryant and Shaq getting to the finals once or something. Be like, man, they only got there once.
Right, and you're like, this makes no sense.
Yeah. All right, we're back tomorrow. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.